Good morning. I'm Christopher Purdy. One of my favorite events is All Sides Weekend Books. Welcome. Here we are with two of our very distinguished literary mavens. Cassie Rose is WOSU's book critic, and Kevin Griffith is a poet and professor at Capital University. And before I turn it over to the two of you, I just want to say that I was looking at the list of books that I've read recently. And to quote my wife, enough already with the down books. I mean, they're very, very depressing and very, very violent and things. So, Kevin Griffith, you said you had a funny book for us. So let's start with that.
Yeah, that's good. It's the fall. So in the fall, I vacillate between serious books of poetry and then completely non-serious comedy books. I highly recommend this book. It's called This Is a Book by Dimitri Martin. Dimitri Martin is a sort of a cerebral comic, okay? And he's written this in, there's drawings in this, poems, chapters, epigrams, little prose poems. Just to give you an indication of what's in here, every single page is filled with something funny, but one chapter is statistics. He's made up these statistics, okay? Here's a statistic. It is safer to fly in a plane than it is to fly in a car. for the price of just one cup of coffee, you can feed a child a coffee. Okay, very good. And he has a whole section of epigrams here. Epigrams. Here's a great epigram. Let no man's deathbed be a futon. Very good.
The book is sort of an experience as opposed to like a reading journey, you could say.
Yeah, and he's a literary mind. He's sort of the ilk of a George Carlin, although he's a little bit...
Cleaner?
Yeah, he's cleaner than George Carlin. You could let your child read this, I think, and have a lot of fun. Another thing he does here, there's a great chapter called A Crossword Puzzle, and every single answer is just A's. And so here are the questions for a cross. Two batteries, popular organization for car owners, something Fonzie might say, four children's refrigerator magnets, okay, that kind of thing. And everything, of course, is you fill in A. It's very funny. He's an extremely creative guy. Dimitri Martin, I know that he's done HBO specials. He has a very good literary mind, and this is just a really fun romp. If you're looking for something that'll make you laugh or make you think on almost every page, I would highly recommend This Is a Book, Dimitri Martin.
Take that, everybody who says we're too serious. We started off with Dimitri Martin and Kevin Griffith. Thank you so much. We will be welcoming your phone calls later in the program. We'll want to know what you've been reading, your own recommendations, or some feedback on something you hear us talking about. Cassie Rose, you and I were talking before, but we were reminiscing about Ohio Anno Authors, mm-hmm. which is a wonderful series you and our own Kevin Petrilla put together a couple of years ago. And you have a book that's about 70 years old from an Ohio author I hadn't heard of.
Yes, it's called Now in November by Josephine Johnson. She won the Pulitzer Prize for this in 1935. I think it was the 1935 Pulitzer. It was published in 1934. It was her first novel. She was 24 years old. And it's one of my all-time favorite books. It was back in the time she was compared to Willa Cather. I think she's more lyric, more poetic, more philosophical in this book than Willa Cather. It takes place in after the Depression or during the Depression. I can't remember. And but during the Dust Bowl. It's a farm family that is trying to keep their farm going. There's a drought. They're in huge debt. And it's narrated by the second daughter. And it would probably, and there's a fire, and then there's a man who comes and you know, wins the heart of the three daughters, and another daughter is sort of a little bit crazy. But if it's a small book, it's very readable, but it's the poetic part of it. And I'll just read the first paragraph of the that opens the book. Now in November, I can see our years as a whole. This autumn is like both an end and a beginning to our lives, and those days which seemed confused with the blur of all things too near and too familiar are clear and strange now. It has been a long year, longer and more full of meaning than all those 10 years that went before it. There were nights when I felt that we were moving towards some awful and hopeless hour, but when that hour came, it was broken up and confused because we were too near, and I did not even quite realize that it had come. That's the kind of voice you get throughout this entire book. It's small, it's beautiful, it's lyric, and very, very moving.
Her name is Josephine Johnson. What became of her?
She went on to publish a few more books, but I can't remember when she, you know, her, the length of her life or anything.
Clearly well known back in her day.
Actually, I don't think that she was. Oh. That's it. You know, sometimes that's the thing about the Pulitzers. We think, oh my gosh, they've won the Pulitzer, the National Book Award, they're on the map now, and they're not. And that's, for example, there's so many Pulitzers you could go back and think, oh my gosh, I've never heard of this book, I've never heard of this author. So, I mean, for her, she was, you could say, a starburst almost, where mm-hmm. here, her first book, she wins a Pulitzer Prize. I mean, that's...
Yeah, I mean, that's almost dangerous, I would think, in a way. I mean, especially at 24, to have such notoriety. Mm-hmm. It's like, now what are you going to do? You know, top that.
Right, and on the short list for the Man Booker Prize right now is I think there are two first-time novelists, one in particular, Stephen Kelman, who wrote Pigeon English. I mean, he was working a job and got laid off and sat down and said he was going to write a book and send it in. It got picked out of the slush pile. And now he's on the short list for the Man Booker Prize. I mean, whether he wins it or not, I mean, the expectation of him is huge mm-hmm. and could possibly be paralyzing.
Well, related to that, let's talk about for a minute Will Allison, who is another, mm-hmm. he studied here at Ohio State. Mm-hmm. I think he got his MFA in the creative writing program mm-hmm. here. Mm-hmm. Michelle Herman will call and yell at me if I'm wrong about that. But his brand new novel is called The Long Drive Home. I couldn't put it down. I was riveted to it. How about yourself?
I couldn't put it down either. I found it, on the one hand, incredibly compelling, so I kept wanting to stick with it, couldn't put it down. Another was that because there's a psychological thriller part of it, too, I felt like I had to walk away. I got so nervous because it's so real. It could happen to any of us, what happens to this main character. He's in a car accident or... Actually, he gets involved more with a little bit of road rage in the beginning. And so there's a buildup to this moment of something happens in his neighborhood where he makes a decision of this. There's this car racing towards him, and he decides to teach the kid a lesson, turns, pretends to, like he's going to turn into his driveway, then turns back. And the kid, instead of stopping, goes, swerves around to go around him, thinking he's going to complete the turn. But his, you know, the driver's car is still in the lane.
And the kid is killed.
The kid's killed.
Right there. And that happens like in the first five pages.
Yes.
And it's about what that does to his life. And it, as you said, it's very vivid. And I really got that sense, too. This could have been me. This could have been anybody.
Well,
no
yes,
question.
Because on any other day, he might have just let it go and just, you know, rolled his eyes or honked his horn. But instead, he makes this irrational choice. And he has a six-year-old daughter in the back. And she sees everything. And so here this kid is killed. And he proceeds to lie. Because what he captures here is this moment of, I don't want to lose my normal everyday life. I just want to have my ordinary life. And this one stupid thing I did, you know, I didn't mean to. So he starts lying. And that's where the cringe, the, oh my gosh, I can't believe he's doing this. And is he going to get caught? And his wife figures out that he's hiding things.
Right.
And then she gets afraid they're going to be sued, and she wants to separate to protect the assets. It's very...
It's a mess, but it's a very compelling mess.
And it's on the surface with you as a reader, too.
Yeah.
Because, you feel like, this could happen to me or to anyone.
So I think that's
He does it very well.
That's our joint recommendation today
yes.
for our listeners. The Long Drive Home by Will Allison, who is a product of The Ohio State University. One thing I want to ask you, the weather is starting to change a little bit, and we're getting into autumn, and we're getting into our long, cold nights. And I love to read on long, cold nights. Do your tastes as readers change when it's darker, longer, and colder? Do you need something cozy? Or Kevin, can you speak to that?
What happens with me, like I said, I flip between the sublime and the ridiculous. So usually in the fall, I'm fairly busy, and I spend a lot of my reading energy during the day reading students' papers, reading books for my classes, that kind of thing. So in the fall, I tend to get a little bit more serious, and I'll go back to reading poetry. You know, summer is light, airy. You don't want to read poetry. You don't want to be engulfed into intense feelings in the summer.
So Joan Collins' memoirs.
Right. memoirs, lightweight, Swedish, noir mysteries, that kind of thing. That's the fun thing to do. So when fall comes around, that's when I shift back to poetry and start looking seriously at poetry again. Cassie, what do you do?
I do go towards the series, too. And what I start to look toward is also the award winners and who's going to be up for the National Book Award, the Man Booker Prize and all that. But I do like to get into the more serious. I can sit in my reading chair. It's dark outside. I put a fire in the fireplace. I do all those, you know, typical things that you would put around a good reading evening. But I like to get into the longer ones because I feel closed in and I want that sense of going away. Whereas when it's the summertime, I want to be out on the porch. Mm-hmm. I want to be, you know, with a lighter fare. It's the whole beach read kind of a thing.
Well, let's ask our listeners as the program progresses today for some cozy books. If you want to get cozy on a long, cold, dark night, what would you recommend? Our number is 292-8513. That's a 614 area. 292-8513. You can also send an email to allsides@wosu.org. or visit our Facebook page. Cozy books, I mean, I like very sort of Dickens-like, Dickens himself, but really, I want yarns. Mm-hmm. I want a good yarn, several yarns in a big, thick book of a cold night myself.
So would you go back to the classics?
I have done that. The last one I read, I just put this one down by Ken Follett. I had never read Ken Follett before. It's called Fall of Giants. It's a big, spectacular World War I novel with a lot of real characters in it. But it's a great yarn. If you want to really – and it's 1,000 pages, but I think I read it in a week because it's just – it's an easy, you know – riveting. It's like a big, wonderful movie. So yes. I really enjoyed that very much. So anyway, we'd like to know your cozy books, 292-8513, if you want to keep yourself warm of a long and dark night. We also have, did you have another Ohio author to tell us about? Oh, Will Ellison we did, and the Pulitzer Prize winner.
Yes, Josephine Johnson. Yeah.
We have to take a break in a minute, but before we do, I want, Kevin, could you give us a little poetry to break us out?
Yes.
A reading?
I highly recommend, it's very hard to find good books of poetry, even for a poet, okay? There's a lot of it out there, and you have to really sift through it. So I can't recommend enough a new book of poetry called The Book of Things, The Book of Things by Alex Steger. Alex Steger is a Slovenian poet. And this book consists of intense metaphysical meditations on ordinary objects. And he's brilliant. I'll just read a little bit of a poem called Egg. Egg. When you kill it at the edge of the pan, you don't notice that the egg grows an eye in death. It is so small it doesn't satisfy even the most modest morning appetite. When you sit down eye to eye behind a table, you blind it soon enough with a crust of bread.
Oh,
that's very good. Every single one is like that. It has a very a dark edge, almost a creepy tone to them, but just infused with surreal detail. And this is the Book of Things, poems by Alex Steger. He's Slovenian. It won the Lannan Translation Award for best translated book of poetry last year.
Kind of makes you feel guilty about making breakfast.
Yeah.
We are going to go away for 1 minute, and we will be right back. Keep your calls coming. We'll get to you right away, 292-8513.
President Obama is out pushing his jobs bill, and he has dropped that whole complex intellectual argument thing.
Pass this jobs plan. Pass this jobs bill. Pass this jobs bill.
So, following the example of our president, listen to this week's show. Listen to this week's show. I'm Peter Sagal. Listen to this week's show. That's the News Quiz from NPR. And God bless America.
Wait, don't tell me. Tomorrow morning at 11 on 89.7 NPR News. 55 degrees with cloudy skies, some sunshine later today and a high of 64. Partly cloudy tonight, a low of 50. Some sunshine Saturday and a high of 70.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Columbus Foundation. Les Wexner, Mayor Coleman, and the National Endowment for the Arts Chairman will speak on the importance of the arts at 4 p.m. Monday, September 19th at Mershon Auditorium. Registration at columbusfoundation.org.
All Sides Weekend continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Thank you, our producer, Amy Jurevich. I'm Christopher Purdy, here with Cassie Rose and Kevin Griffith. You wanted to make one comment about poetry, Cassie Rose?
I did, because it was Kevin, you mentioned that it's hard to find good poetry and that you have to sift through a lot. That's a big thing for me. And in fact, I wrote a blog post about it, how I resent the fact that I have to go out and buy a lot of poetry books because a lot of them aren't in the libraries. And I have to sift through to find the one that either resonates with me, whose work I like. I mean, Franz Wright, you've brought a book of mm-hmm. his. I love his poetry. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, I don't know how to find a good book of poetry that's going to work for me.
Yeah, it's very difficult for me too, because one of the problems with poetry is there's so much of it produced and so few people read it, actually read it seriously. About the only people who do read it are poets. So for me, I look for recommendations from friends, colleagues. I keep my eye open for things like I follow the Writer's Almanac with Garrison Keillor, which will mm-hmm. send you. If you go to the Writer's Almanac, you'll get a new poem every day, and that's a good place. Yeah, they send Garrison Keillor will send you a poem. He'll read the poem, and then there's a few little tidbits about other writers. That's an excellent way to see the new things, sort of sample new things coming out. So, mm-hmm. yeah, it is very hard. There's so much of it, and so much of contemporary poetry isn't very good.
And you can listen to this show and get Kevin's recommendations. We have Paul on the line from Worthington, who's been waiting. Hi, Paul. Thanks for holding on.
Amy, Casey, Kevin. Did I get the names right?
Well, go ahead anyway. Cassie, Christopher, and Kevin. Go for it.
Oh, well, rats. I tried. This is not cozy reading.
Okay.
But I think it's really important. Barbara Ehrenreich, you would probably know best from Nickel and Dimed.
Yes, of course. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, the latest volume from her is something called Bright Sided. As bright, like as in your headlights, bright, and sided, like the side of a barn, bright-sided. Mm-hmm. And it is a take on America's obsession with sort of the happy-go-lucky power of positive thinking, our approach to life, which I think is being sold, I mean literally sold, by churches, by corporations, by politicians. And she takes this from the transatlantic transposition of Calvinism from Europe to the United States through Mary Baker Eddy and certainly many stops along the way. It's very nicely backed with, you know, her references and such. But it sort of takes a look at how the notion that if we simply will it, you know, it will come. You know, if we want money, we just have to have the right attitude.
Paul, I heard about this book in reference to persons with cancer.
Yes.
Yeah. Is that the crux of it?
She was
saying.
No. Okay. No. I'm sorry. I want to correct that. Her first chapter, or if you will, entry, has to do with her own breast cancer, in terms of how cancer is being sold in a way to many people as, this is a transformational process and it'll be great and what have you. And I worked on, a cancer facility and got the accreditation for it myself, took 24 months. I know a little bit about it. I'm not a professional in that sense, but an administrative kind of grunt. And I know a little bit about it. And she's just saying, no, it's not all hearts and flowers and, you know, pink ribbons and stuff. It really doesn't work quite like that. If you're the person who's, you know, in the position of having the disease. Okay, but that's not the point of the book. That's maybe, an intro chapter. The rest, you could take that chapter out, and the rest of the book would be completely worth reading.
Okay, but we have to move on a bit. But
I know.
But I just want to repeat the title and the author.
It is Barbara Ehrenreich, Bright-Sided. I recommend it to anybody who's got a brain.
Oh, well, thank you. I'll try to be part of that company. I thank you, Paul, very much for that call and for waiting. We had a couple of other callers on hold, and they, alas, have gone away. But so call back. Come on. We want cozy books, and we want angry books and funny books and easy books and hard books. We want to know what you're reading. 614-292-8513. You can send an email to allsides@wosu.org, or you can visit the All Sides Facebook page. Barbara Ehrenreich's Nickel and Dime was an examination of how to live on minimum wage. It's not how to, it's how people can and don't. You know, it was a very disturbing, wonderful, angry book. And I love. And I think if I were ill and someone came to me, hearts and flowers, I'd probably slug them right in the mouth. just so. We have a comment from Kate on Facebook. Cozy books, anything by Thomas Hardy. Return of the Native, Far from the Madding Crowd, Jude the Obscure, classic yarns, beautiful descriptions, Thomas Hardy. That's dark and cold as well, isn't it, Thomas
Hardy? Jude the Obscure.
Yes. Jennifer also recommends The Eagle Has Crashed by Ted Loxonen and The Declaration of Independence by Nick Gillespie and Matt Welch. Very, I don't know them, but they are very excellent and timely reads, and we feed on your recommendations in this program. So thank you, Jennifer and Kate. They were on our Facebook page. The Eagle Has Crashed by Ted Loxonen and The Declaration of Independence by Nick Gillespie. So why don't I should just ask each of you, what's your favorite cozy book, Cassie Rose?
My favorite or what I'm maybe
okay.
reading?
Recommend some cozy books.
I will recommend. I'm going down this place because the books that were recommended here, I think it's books that you can probably be comfortable. You get into that setting where you just lose the world and you're comfortable and maybe cozy. Because this really isn't a cozy book, but it's a very, very good book. I mean, maybe I'm getting confused. Anyway, I'm going to you know why? Because it's science fiction.
How about a lousy book that's
How
cozy?
About a lousy book? Right. It's science fiction. And I don't read science fiction, but Connie Willis is one of the best sci-fi readers out there now. And I thought she might be able to get me into the genre. And especially with the book called Blackout, and then there's another book called All Clear. They're two books, but she intended to write them as one, so they work as one to get the conclusion. You've got to read All Clear, which I haven't read yet, but it's time travel. So that's why I thought, oh, okay, time travel.
Does it go anywhere interesting? Do they go anywhere back?
Well, they go back because it takes place in 2060 Oxford, historians at the University of Oxford, and they go back in time to do field research about the past and to clear up the details. And where they're going back in this book is into World War II, the Battle of Dunkirk, the Blitz in London, and also with the evacuees. Well, what happens is that they each go back, and the turning point of what turns the pages is that they're drops, which is how they go back and forth, close, and they don't know why. What's also is that in this time travel is that you are prevented from going to divergence places, which your presence could change history. Well, what happens is that Michael Davies, who's a reporter in Dover, ends up in Dunkirk, and that's a divergence point. So there's some situations, and he wonders if he's affected history. The detail in this book is astonishing. You feel like you're there. Not because of the emotions of the characters, but because of the details of the train schedules or about stockings that women were wearing and that they were deprived of. And because there's a historian there, she knows everything that's going to happen. It gives a phenomenal viewpoint.
Give the title and author again.
It's called Blackout by Connie Willis. And Connie Willis has won, let me think about this, 11 Hugo Awards and 7 Nebula Awards. And this book, Blackout / All Clear, came out in, I think, 2010.
We have a lot of people calling us, and I'm delighted about that. We have our stalwart Aaron working the phones. He's doing his best to get to everybody. Let's talk with Patrick in Columbus, who has a recommendation. Hi, Patrick. Are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead.
I wanted to recommend Hal Duncan's it's a duality. I don't know what you call the two-book series. It's called Vellum and Ink. They're sort of like science fiction, but it would kind of be mean to classify them as that. They're these really poetic books that explore the idea of synchronicity in myth and history. The main characters are all kind of these archetypes, like Jungian archetypes, that keep on reappearing throughout different periods in history. And it's just it's amazing prose, the way that he constructs these ideas and puts the words together and everything else. You know, it's half of the time it's poetry, although it's written in prose, and then half of the time it's just, regular written prose. And it just grabbed me. So
Hal Duncan is the author, is that right?
correct.
Yes. Kevin, is that something you know about?
No, I haven't heard of that, but okay. It sounds really interesting. Yeah. It's called Vellum and
Ink.
Ink. Yes, yeah, I'll have to check that out. That sounds very good.
Patrick, thank you very much for the recommendation. Thank you.
Thanks.
The call. We have Jim on Columbus who wants to talk about No Place to Be Somebody. I just hung up on Jim. Jimmy, you there?
Yeah.
Hi, go ahead.
This play was, as far as I know, the first play by an African-American playwright to win the Pulitzer Prize in drama, and it's a really great read, even if you don't see the play performed. And it has a Columbus connection because after Charles Gordon, the author, died, the playwright died, his family moved here to Columbus for a while. So it actually has a Columbus connection, and it's set in a bar in Harlem in New York City, and the whole play takes place in this bar involves a lot of really complex characters that sort of come and go and interact with each other at this bar.
No Place to Be Somebody was a very popular, it ran for quite a while in New York, and I think it still turns up on college campuses and high schools pretty often. I remember it quite well. It's a wonderful play.
Yeah, so I just wanted to recommend that as a good read if you can get a copy of the script.
Well, yeah. Go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah, I was going to just chime in and spin off of that. We rarely talk about plays on the show, and I really enjoy reading plays, and I had a recommendation of a book of plays. They're very good comfort reading. My recommendation is All in the Timing by David Ives, one of the funniest playwrights I've ever encountered. Mm-hmm. All in the Timing, 14 plays by David Ives. Just to give you an example of the way he writes, these are all one-act plays, but he has one called The Philadelphia. And what happens in this play is people are physically in one place, like L.A., but metaphysically they get caught in another place, like Philadelphia. And if you're caught in a Philadelphia, no one ever has what you want. You'll go into a drugstore and you ask for aspirin, and they don't have it. We got Bayer, we got everything else, but no aspirin. Or if you go into a deli and ask for pastrami, we don't have it. You know, they never have what you want. But it's a very funny play. I'll give you a line from it. It's good. At the end of the play, one of the actors says, I don't know. It's not that bad in a Philadelphia. The waitress says, could have been worse. I've been in a Cleveland all week. A Cleveland? What's that like? It's like death without the advantages.
Okay, if you're in Cleveland listening online, we love you. We love Cleveland.
Yeah, we love it. That's a great play. All in the Timing by David Ives. Very funny, man.
Yeah, that's another sort of off-Broadway maven that performs a lot.
Well, in reading drama, I used to read tons of Tom Stoppard. It's just because you get in the flow of it. It's fast. It's and especially when it's funny, it can be incredibly entertaining.
Mm-hmm. And they're funny in a different way. They can be biting and sort of a little bit sarcastic is the wrong word, but you know, a little bit funny, cynical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that plays it literally. Pardon the pun, in a different way in your head, I think, than a prose.
Well, and it has to be, every word matters, and it's very smart. So the conversation can't be loose and casual like in a novel. All of it is very intentional.
Yeah, and there's no exposition, so the pacing is so much faster in a play.
And we have a call from Julie, who's in German Village, with a recommendation. Hi, Julie. Julie?
Hello.
Go ahead.
Hi, I want to recommend A Small Hotel by Robert. Help me ask you. I forget his full name because I passed it on immediately after I was done because it was so great. It is about it's deep. It's a little bit dark. It's not a beach read. And it's about a marriage and 30 years into the marriage. And so a lot of flashbacks to their hotel where they went on their honeymoon, where they met, and where they've gone back to celebrate their anniversaries. And it's a cuddle up on the couch, cover yourself with a blanket, and go into that rabbit hole.
Well, okay. I mean, that sounds cozy in a good way to me. It's A Small Hotel. Is the author Robert Butler? Does that
Thank
ring?
You.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Robert Owen Butler.
We thank you very much, Julie, for that call. I have a note here. I don't know, Kevin, if you know about this. There's a poetry reading at the Rife Center on September 22nd at 5:30. Caller came in to give us information, so I'm glad to have that. That's the only detail I have. Mm-hmm. Our number is 292-8513 if you'd like to join the conversation. Our email is allsides@wosu.org. You can also visit our Facebook page. We'd love to have your comments. We'd love to have your recommendations. Alice in Columbus sent us an email recommending the Dark Tower series by Stephen King. Mm-hmm. Stephen King is one of our most prolific and successful writers, but we don't talk about him very much. How come?
It's interesting. I personally like Stephen King's short stories, but I didn't much care for his novels. But I have a teenage son, and he's really into Stephen King, and he really appreciates his prose, and he's just reading, just gobbling up everything King has written. I found his novels to be just too ponderous. Like we talked about exposition, way too much exposition, and kind of they seem to me very much like stretched out, extended short stories. So that's why I've never taken a liking to him, although I really like The Mist and some of his shorter works.
Do you think that's because editors just gave him free rein in his later books? Because his earlier books weren't, I think, were tighter. Like
yes,
Salem's
they were.
There
were a lot. Salem's Lot and Carrie, and mm-hmm. the novella, The Shawshank Redemption, was mm-hmm. based upon. Mm-hmm. That's very, very well done. But yeah, I just get tired after a while of just mm-hmm. reading description after description, and I kind of know where it's going. And but others could disagree with me. I think people expect a lot from him, and they expect big things, and so they want a long lengthy read. You know,
I don't know if this is a nice thing to say, but I tend to see the movies first because mm-hmm. almost all of Stephen King's books have mm-hmm. been made mm-hmm. into quite good movies. Shawshank Redemption was a great movie.
Yeah,
Dolores Claiborne was a wonderful
mm-hmm.
movie, mm-hmm. and then read the novels, and that made it a little easier for me. But I like Stephen King as well.
About the hotel, that one.
Oh, The Shining.
The Shining.
Kubrick's The Shining. Mm-hmm.
That book was very good too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my son just finished that one.
One of the first that really made his name. It was mm-hmm. really truly, truly creepy mm-hmm. in a good way. I'm Christopher
Jack
Purdy.
Nicholson.
This is All Sides Weekend Books. Our number is 292-8513. Our guests are Cassie Rose, who is WOSU's book critic, and she maintains the website, the blog, thelongestchapter.com. Kevin Griffith is the very busy professor of creative mm-hmm. writing, English poetry, and everything else intelligent at Capital University. We will be back in 90 seconds, so keep calling and keep the comments coming.
On the next Fresh Air, Allison Pearson talks about her novel, I Think I Love You, about a girl obsessed with David Cassidy. It's just come out in paperback. The film adaptation of Pearson's other novel, I Don't Know How She Does It, opens this weekend. It stars Sarah Jessica Parker as a mother trying to keep up with her child and her high-pressure job. Join us.
Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon. This is 89.7 NPR News. Be sure to watch Columbus on the Record tonight at 8:30 on WOSU-TV. This week, News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson and his panel discuss the deal to keep the Blue Jackets playing at Nationwide Arena. Also, President Obama's visit to Columbus and redistricting. Tune in for Columbus on the Record tonight at 8:30 on WOSU-TV.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation and supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org.
Some sunshine and a few clouds today, a high of 64 degrees, partly cloudy tonight and a low of 50. Partly sunny for Saturday, up to a high of 70 degrees. Some clouds Saturday night, a low of 50. And looking ahead to Sunday, sunny skies, a nice day with a high of 75. All Sides Weekend continues. This is 89.7 NPR News.
Thank you, Amy Jurevich. We are back. I'm Christopher Purdy with Cassie Rose and Kevin Griffith. A lot of people have been calling in with their recommendations and even more are sending us emails. Jeff has emailed suggesting The Gone Away World by Nick Harkaway. He says it's brilliantly written and bizarre. which I like. Mm-hmm. With every page, you say, this is the strangest book I've ever read. It can't get any stranger. And then it does. So that's called The Gone Away World. Lord of the Rings has also been recommended as a great cozy book or series.
That would be great to
second
read
that,
during the wintertime.
Mm-hmm. And The Knife Man. Jonathan on Facebook recommends The Knife Man by Wendy Moore, about the life and times of the father of modern surgery, John Hunter. These are books I, except for Lord of the Rings, I wouldn't have thought of, and I'm delighted to have these recommendations. Yeah, thank you. We also have Mickey from Delaware, who's been waiting patiently on the phone. Hi, are you there, Mickey?
Hi.
Go ahead.
I would recommend anything by Lisa C. She has Chinese ancestry, and she has written two or three novels, and I'm sorry I can't give you the names off the top of my head, but they are about how life was, especially for Chinese women, back in like the 500s and 600s back in China. She also has a short series started with continuing characters, an American who is the ambassador or a detective who gets sent to China and works with a Chinese detective there on some mystery cases. But the ones about ancient China, the characters and the storylines, I mean, as I was reading these stories, I was so caught up in them, I actually found myself wondering why I ever read any other kind of writing, because the prose was just so absolutely beautifully written.
Her name is Lisa C. How do you know how she spells C?
Yeah, S-E-E, just like
C, okay.
With your I.
Very good. Thank you so much, Mickey. We appreciate the recommendation very much. We have a couple of calls waiting, but you, Kevin, brought in a book that, Take This the Right Way, I kind of was surprised about.
It surprised me,
American
too.
American Caesar.
A colleague at the law school, where I teach at Capitol's Law School as well, he recommended American Caesar, which is a biography of Douglas MacArthur, a figure I thought I couldn't care less about, you know, that kind of thing, by William Manchester, who's just a phenomenal writer,
yeah,
who wrote over a dozen
Death
books.
Death of a President and, is his
yes,
notorious.
And even if you don't like MacArthur, you should read American Caesar. I think it came out in 1978, and it is a tome. It's about 900 pages long. But read it for the prose. It's brilliant. The man has a brilliant command of parallel structure in his sentences, and the detail is phenomenal. But also, I just didn't know that much about Douglas MacArthur, and boy, they don't make leaders in his mold anymore. This is a man who had a spine and knew what he wanted and was willing to sacrifice everything for it, and he modeled every behavior he wanted those under him to follow. He modeled himself. And that's I think it's a good read to read in these times. And his son was really interesting too. He had one son, Arthur MacArthur, who liked to wear wedding dresses and
and
sing. Yeah, that was a very interesting twist at the end as well.
I was a little boy when General MacArthur died, and I remember coming home from school. His funeral was televised. And I remember my father standing at attention in the living room when the casket was shown on television. So that's American Caesar by William Manchester. Thank you for that. Nick from Columbus is on the phone with a recommendation. Hi, Nick.
Hello.
Go ahead.
I would like to recommend The Wheel of Time by Robert Jordan.
Okay. Tell us about it.
It's a fantasy series, and I love The Lord of the Rings, but this is just so much more than that. It's just amazing, I think.
Okay, it's called Wheel of Time by Robert Jordan. Is it a series or a single book?
It's a series.
Great, terrific. Nick, we thank you for your call. Thanks very much. 292-8513 is the number. Emails to allsides@wosu.org with your recommendations. I need to ask Cassie Rose to talk about a book she's brought with her or throw something else. What have you got for us to recommend or talk about?
Well, I'd like to recommend the short list for the Man Booker Prize. The Man Booker Prize is going to be awarded, I think, October 18th.
Precise. What is that?
The Man Booker Prize is Britain's top prestigious prize. It has a purse of like 50,000 pounds, sterling pounds. But it's their way of saying, it's the best novel of the year. That's what they award. This year, and they come with a long list of 13, then they whittle it down to 6, and there are the 6. I have listed them on my blog at thelongestchapter.com and given links to those books. What is fascinating to me about this shortlist now is The premise of the judges, and I'm just going to read something to you about that. It comes from the Periscope Post, which is in the United Kingdom. And the judges have caused controversy by claiming that they were prizing readability over any other quality. So Dame Stella Remington said, "We want people to buy these books and read them, not buy them and admire them." She said that on The Guardian. Whilst the New Yorker's book bench quoted Chris Mullen, another judge, saying, "Other people said to me when they heard I was in the judging panel, I hope you pick something readable this year. That was such a big factor. It had to zip along." So here
you know, a lot of people relate to that.
Yes. So here are the finalists that they say zip along. And okay. I can attest to at least one of them. The Sense of an Ending by Julian Barnes, which was supposed to come out in January 2012, is now been pushed up to October 2011 in the U.S. Or October 11th, 2011. Anyway, that's the favorite everybody thinks is probably going to win, and it's a novel about a man coming to terms with his mutable past. Jamrock's Menagerie by Carol Birch.
I talked about that last time. I actually had it on my iPad. I read that on the iPad, and I can sure tell you that now Jamrock's Menagerie is a novel that zips along. It's an exercise in readability. You lose yourself. It's a story about a boy on a whaling adventure, and they capture a dragon. It's sort of lots of echoes of Moby Dick in there. Fun to read.
Could young people read it?
Oh, yes. Yeah, young people could read it.
And that's available now in the U.S. The Sisters Brothers by Patrick DeWitt. It's a classic Western set in 1850s Oregon and California. Darkly comic.
Written by a Brit? British cowboys?
He's Canadian,
okay,
I believe.
Okay.
And Half-Blood Blues by Essie Edujiwin. I can't pronounce her last name. The award goes to the British Commonwealth and the Republic of Ireland.
Okay.
That's where the authors have to come from. Half-Blood Blues is set in 1940s Paris, and it's about the disappearance of a saxophone player. That one is not yet available in the U.S. I don't even know if it's scheduled to be published.
That sounds like the one I would like. Yeah, okay.
Right. Well, you could certainly get it on Amazon in the U.K.
Yes.
The thing is, though, is when you convert to dollars, I mean, you're going to pay double.
That's a lot, right.
Because
value.
Anyway, another one, Pigeon English by Stephen Kelman. I've talked about that book here. I think it's certainly a zip-along book. I think the problem is, though, it doesn't resonate with U.S. readers because it's based on an incident that happened in London. So just a little caution or warning there. Snowdrops by A.D. Miller. It's a psychological drama that takes place in present-day Moscow. So this is a very different list. And so if you want some good reading books that zip along, at least they're promising us that it will zip along.
And when you zip along, you could make – those are screenplays, what you've just done. I think there's a connection there. Can we make – I don't mean to be crass, but can we make a movie out of this and make more – I think I'm not sure. The Man Booker is a little bit the Buckingham Palace kind of award, but
that's a good way to describe it.
It's either comforting or disturbing that they want a really readable book. I choose to say it's comforting myself.
Yeah. Apparently, no more A.S. Byatt, right?
No more A.S. Byatt, more Hilary Mantel.
But that's the judges. I mean, they then came out and said, okay, we've got to find some books that are readable. There were a couple on the long list that I would have chosen, and so I don't know if they decided they didn't zip along enough or what. But I'm intrigued by this. So I'm going to try and get Snowdrops read. I also want to read Half-Blood Blues and The Sense of an Ending. I'd like to read them before the award is made, but we'll see.
And I want to put a plug in for Hilary Mantel won a couple of years ago for Wolf Hall, her book about Tudor England, which was fascinating. I'm reading now a book she wrote 25 years ago. It must have been her first. It's a novel called A Vacant Possession. And it's about schizophrenia, another happy-go-lucky book, but it's about multiple personalities, and it's actually very entertaining. It is a yarn. It is a very, very good read. And we have Aaron on the phone from Columbus with a recommendation. Hi, Aaron.
Hi. I wanted to recommend American Gods by Neil Gaiman.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
It's a fantastic book, I guess. The premise, I mean, it's a novel, but I think the main premise would be that everyone who's immigrated to America over centuries and centuries and centuries has brought their beliefs with them. And so since they bring their beliefs with them, versions of the gods of all their various pantheons have kind of manifested themselves in America. And so as the book unfolds, you kind of... it has a lot of different mythological characters coming into contact with each other in sort of a seamy underworld, behind the scenes kind of way.
It's called American Gods by Neil Gaiman. Is that right?
That is correct.
Thank you so much, Aaron, for the recommendation. It doesn't sound to me like that zips along, but, you know, I wanted to hear what people are reading now, and that's a good point. We have Jessica sent us a comment on Facebook recommending Ken Follett's Pillars of the Earth, which is on my table now. It's his novel about the building of a 12th century cathedral in England and World Without End. She said she read them both and twice, and they're amazing. So I'm just getting into Ken Follett, so I'm glad to have that. We've already talked about, but let's remind people about The Paris Wife.
Oh, the Paris
by
wife,
Paula MacLean,
yes.
Which is about, which is a novel about Ernest Hemingway's first wife, Hadley was her name.
It's on the bestseller list.
Yes, I enjoyed that.
Yes, I haven't read it.
No,
I didn't read it.
Hemingway was married four times, and his first wife was the one that he was living with when he wrote A Movable Feast, when he was set during that time in the 20s. And the one compelling part about their marriage was she was traveling to meet him somewhere, and he said, bring with you the briefcase with all my manuscripts. Mm-hmm. And she left them on the train, and the marriage didn't really recover from that, although it went on for a while. It was a really, it was a dark, kind of a dark thing to do. The Paris Wife. We have time for a few more calls if you want to give us recommendations. 292-8513. What else have you? You always come in here with grab bags full of wonderful. It's like Halloween, you know, with candy, with these books. So throw out something else for us.
Well, I want to make sure I mention this is one of my favorite poets, and you usually can't go wrong with Franz Wright.
Yeah.
Franz Wright, winner of the Pulitzer Prize a few years ago. His latest book just came out. It's called Kinder Tottenwald. It's a book of prose poems, which is a little bit different, a different turn for Franz Wright. Franz Wright is, of course, the son of the famous Ohio poet James Wright. And Franz Wright's poetry is normally noted for being like chiseled down to just its crystal essence. But in here, he opens up a little bit. I'll read you just a little bit from the first poem called Winter Sleep. And these are prose poems, so they don't have traditional line endings. I was having trouble sleeping. I don't know how long I'd been lying there and listening to the blizzard when I had the most vivid impression that it was a blizzard in Minneapolis in 1959. And I found this disturbing. I knew it would now have to turn on its lamp, get out of bed, and try to write about me. And of course, no matter what it wrote, I would just sound like something it had made up. That's really fascinating. It's so subtle how he turns the blizzard into the persona in the poem that has to get up out of bed and write about him. His writing is so subtle. You have to read it again and again to understand just those real those little changes in pronouns, you know, that make a huge difference in the tone of the poem. So that's Kinder Tottenwald, prose poems by Franz Wright. Just came out in September.
Thank you for that recommendation. You got one for us, Kathy?
I do, and I have been bringing this book to every show over the summer, and I have not been talking about it because, Christopher, I think that you would roll your eyes. Is it because the title is
never
so boring? Well, here's the thing. I rolled my eyes when the publisher contacted me, small publisher, British Columbia, and she asked me to take a look at this book, the title of which is called Monoculture. And I was like, seriously? I mean, you've got to
really?
Be kidding.
Really? Seriously.
And this is really not the kind of book I would read. And the thing is, though, with small publishers, I really like to take a look at what they're doing because I think they're taking some risks now. And I think that they are also very finely tuned into some of the really, really good writers that are being overlooked. Anyway, book's called Monoculture, How Our Story is Changing Everything by F.S. Michaels. It's nonfiction. It's about 145 pages. And what it's about is a monoculture is the master story that drives us in our cultures and drives our everyday lives. And we're not really aware of it. And for us, the monoculture or our story is economic, no surprise. But what she does is that she presents it in a way that suddenly makes sense for how we're all feeling. In other words, I was underlining constantly because what she was saying is that everything is monetized in our life. It is not just your jobs, but it is also your charity work. It is your personal relationships. So that anything that you decide or any choice that you make, you're going to be asking the question, where's the value in this? And is it going to be of advantage to me? Is it going to be worthwhile for me? And it drives everything that we do. And she said, you know, and she doesn't say it's right or wrong. She presents it for us basically saying, you may not be aware of this. And what she compares it to is, say, in the 16th or 17th century, the master story back then was God. Everything revolved around religion and God. So everything they did, the question behind it is, where is God in this? So for us, she's saying, I just want you to be aware that that's why you're feeling the way that you feel. And for me, that's why I was underlining so much, because I have that sense, too. It's like everything seems to have to be measured. Everything has to have this value to it. And she validated the way that I was feeling. She said, if you know about it, you can then make the choice, such as, and she gives a comparison there, to go not choose it would be like the slow food movement.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right. And, you know, some things have it's today it's not enough that it exists like a great painting or something. It's what it can do for you or for society. It's called Monoculture, the book.
How one story is changing everything.
I thank you. Well, no, I'm not rolling my eyes. I've rolled my eyes on other things, but not on that one.
I'm thinking this is such a boring time. Well, I was surprised. She found me through my blog, and I was like, everything that I've written on that blog is like, so not monoculture.
I want to get to a couple of calls, and thank you for that, Cassie. Steve is calling, recommending Jeff Shara's book. I second that. Hi, Steve.
Yes. Anything by Jeff Shara. To me is terrific because he
are you there?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Hi. Yes, anything by Jeff Shar is terrific.
Okay. A lot of them are set during the Civil and Revolutionary Wars, as I recall.
Yes, and he just did a trilogy about World War II that was excellent.
Okay, historical fiction, Jeff Shara. Thank you very much. Nick is on the line from New Albany recommending, I think it's Bill Bryson. Hi, Nick, are you there?
Hi.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think a good being stuck at home in the winter book is At Home by Bill Bryson, where he spends time in his own house telling the history of private life from his house. And although he's writing nonfiction, he's an amazing storyteller. So it's a great book and a really good read, especially if you are stuck at home.
Thank you, Nick. Bill Bryson, you're a man after my own heart. My daughter turned me on to Bill Bryson's books. He writes about doing the Appalachian Trail, and he writes about Australia. He lived in England for many years. He's a travel writer with a very vivid and slightly naughty, wonderful sense there. We're down to our last 2 minutes. I'm sorry we can't get to everybody on the phone, but I do appreciate everybody who's called in. Cassie just picked up a book, so I want each of you to have a final 30-second recommendation. Go ahead, Cassie.
Well, I don't know that I can fill 30 seconds. All I know is that I've picked up this book called Plugged by Ian Colfer. And it's supposed to be very funny. I think it's going to have guns and mobs. And I don't know if plugged is referring to hair plugs or a bullet. So I want to have a light, funny book. And so that's going to be next on my list.
Okay. How about you, Kevin?
It's just a very brief collection of short stories, very, very inventive and creative. It's called Guadalajara by Quim Monzo, M-O-N-Z-O, Guadalajara. Very interesting. One of the stories, for instance, is about the Trojan horse, and the Trojans never come out to pick it up. So it's about the conflict that incurs inside the horse with Ulysses and his men and how they're going to survive there for days, and he won't let them out of the horse. It's very, very, very funny book.
I mean, see, that's a great mind. Yeah. Who would think of that? Yes. What if nobody went to pick up the Trojan horse?
It's called Guadalajara by Quim Monzo.
I'm going to write that one down. Thank you very much. I thank you, Kevin Griffith from Capital University, who has to go teach now. And who got a guest speaker for his 11 o'clock class. Your 1 o'clock class should also listen to this show because you have a great professor. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Cassie Rose, the longest chapter, WOSU's book critic. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus, and streaming online at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.
Support for 89.7 comes from Columbus College of Art and Design, offering continuing education courses to update your creative career skills. Information and online registration are available now at www.ccad.edu.